RadioInfluence.com.
Welcome back to another edition of the MMA Report Podcast with Daniel Galvan. I am Jason Floyd. It is Wednesday, April the 7th, and we are powered by Adam and Eve. We'll tell you about the offer Adam and Eve has for the MMA Report Podcast listener later on in the show. Of course, we got a ton of things to talk about. Alex Volkanovski has released what I would best describe as kind of like a mini doc, a 30-minute little documentary about his COVID story, which was I watched it earlier today, very fascinating, and definitely got a ton of takeaways from that. We'll take a look back at Bellator 255, some of our takeaways from that. We'll preview this weekend's UFC and Bellator events as well. Daniel, how you doing, brother?
I'm doing good, man. I'm doing absolutely amazing. I tell you what, speaking of COVID, I've gotten my first vaccination, Jason. So I haven't turned into a zombie quite yet, but I'm halfway to, getting my full vaccination. So, yeah, it's crazy to think that a year ago we were kind of just getting this thing underway, and here we are. I got one dose of the old Pfizer, and I'm locked and loaded, bro.
So they just went to, in here in Florida where I live, Monday was the first day 18 up can get it. So I was like, I knew like the first couple of days was gonna be hectic. So last night I go on the website just to see, you couldn't get it. All their appointments are booked. So, but I'm definitely gonna get it. I've been asking around like, hey, have you got the Pfizer? You got Moderna? Everyone I hear is they say it's that second shot. But, Daniel, there is, we've seen a lot of crazy things in MMA. Last Thursday night was a first for me. And I turned on CFFC and watching the fight. And I put this tweet out there. And I go, well, this is a first for me watching MMA. As CM Punk says to John Morgan on a broadcast, where's his finger? And I'm sure by now everyone has seen this. And so I printed up the ESPN.com story where Mark Morandi did a story on the fighter here who had to have his finger surgically reattached after it was severed during the second round of his co-main event matchup there at CFFC 94. And I'm just going to read you what it says. It goes, quote, for several minutes, those in the venue were searching for the stray digit. Even promoter Rob Hadeck said officials looked around the cage, and there was even an announcement over the PA system asking people to look for it inside a 2300 arena. It was ultimately discovered that the finger had come off and was lodged inside the fighter's glove all along. The doctor told the fighter that he tore 50% of his tendon on the finger and that he'll potentially need another procedure. This is, I got to read this quote from Rob Hadeck that he said to Mark Romandi of ESPN.com. It was a surreal moment. I said, wait a second, where the F is his finger? They're all like, I don't know.
Yeah, man. It's never good if you're not the UFC and you make it on the front page of ESPN and in the MMA world. You know, some crazy stuff has gone down, and this absolutely tops the cake. I mean, this is a topic I can't even understand. Like, I'm so squeamish when it comes to like losing digits. That idea makes me so uncomfortable. The fact that he didn't notice that he lost his finger after the kick is absurd to me. I would never, ever block a kick with my hand again, by the way. Talk about the other dude who's kicking the guy that your foot speed is so fast that you're just knocking off digits. This is the most insane. This is not a hyperbole to say this is the craziest MMA story I've ever heard. The fact that a person lost his finger is the craziest thing I've ever heard in my entire time of being an MMA fan. There's nothing crazier than somebody losing their finger and not noticing it when he did, by the way.
Yeah, I mean, there's a grappling exchange on the ground where this is before we know what happens, where it looks like, you know, the opponent is holding the glove. And I'll say this, CM Punk, it was the first time I had watched a CFFC broadcast on Fight Pass. I thought CM Punk is a really good color analyst. And one of the more interesting moments in the aftermath of this is CM Punk is interviewing the fighter who won the fight. And CM Punk's like, hey, man, what happened? And he's like, yeah, I don't remember anything that happened in the fight. CM Punk's like, well, guess the interview's over since you didn't remember anything.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, you gotta have some sympathy for the dude because, you know, I'm pretty sure CM Punk doesn't remember too much of his fights either. But I mean, at the end of the day, I feel like that may be something he may want to forget. But I feel like the adrenaline is rushing. You're in the cage. You know, this is a situation where it's like, damn, I was fighting a guy who lost a finger and I couldn't tap him out. Like, that's crazy. Like, my man lost a finger and he wouldn't tap. I couldn't lock on some type of finger hold, which I know probably joint manipulation is illegal. But I mean, that's a freaky situation. And again, it's just the craziest thing. It really is. And thank God the man is able to reattach his finger. I mean, I was walking my dog this morning and I was just kind of playing around with the handle. Like, I was just like removing one finger to see which of my five I would most want to lose. And I feel like my middle finger is the one I could give away. Like at the end of the day, like, I just felt like I had most control of my hand without the middle finger, which is ironic because, you know, you got to love the middle finger, right? Stone Cold Steve Austin. But if I was going to lose any finger, it would be the middle finger. But, yeah, I'm glad my man had his finger reattached. That's crazy that literally they were asking people in attendance to look for the damn finger. I can't get over the absurdity of mixed martial arts, you know?
Now, here's my two other thoughts. Like, they just kind of came to my mind throughout the past couple of days. Is the Dana White line, do you want to be an effing fighter? Mm-hmm. I think this is a prime example of just bring this point up. And then the other thing is, like, if you're the fighter's trainer, does there become a point where, you know, you've got a fighter who's maybe having a rough day in the gym, maybe rough day in the fight, go, bro, your boy lost a finger. He still fought.
Yeah. That that is one heck of a standard to set for that gym, and it's a standard that will never ever be surpassed. There is no occupation. I mean, this is Ronnie Lott level stuff. I mean, literally, that's the only other sports instance I can think of that is similar, except for Ronnie Lott, I think, taped up his hand and went back out on the football field because he was the toughest SOB, you know, in his generation. But yeah, I mean, this dude and Ronnie Lott. I mean, these are the two instances I can think of sports amputations in real time. Again, I can't state how insane this is. There is no occupation that is worth losing your finger over. And yeah, man, I just it was an incredible way to kind of kick off the MMA news cycle over the past 7 days. And by God, we've had a lot of news. We got a stacked show in terms of things we have to talk about here.
Yeah, you actually had mentioned to me yesterday when we were texting about the show about Alexander Volkanovsky and this video that he put up on his YouTube channel. It's a fascinating video to watch. It's 30 minutes long and it documents how, you know, part of it is him talking about after the fact, but also in this video is selfie type shot videos of him in a hospital bed. So I have one major takeaway. I'm going to play that piece of audio here in a moment. My first takeaway from the video, and I've known people who've had COVID-19, but I never thought of it this way. And Volkanovsky's talking about, so when he had to go to the hospital, he had to go in an ambulance. He just couldn't go in a car and walk into a hospital. So he had to physically go in an ambulance. He mentions about how he did have COVID-19 pneumonia. There was a point where his oxygen levels were decreasing and he ends up going to the hospital a second time, just like the first time, went in an ambulance, where he had mentioned a day before that, you know, his friends were like, man, you're looking pale. You should go back to the hospital. Nestle didn't want to go back to the hospital. Got to a point where he realized he needed to go there. As the symptoms were getting worse, mentioned about having a low heart rate. But I want to play this audio because it was my biggest takeaway from it. So it's about a minute long where he's talking about the medicine he needed to have that he had to consult USADA about.
They said things should improve pretty quickly, hopefully. If not, they can always up the medication anyway. So I think I have, what is it, methazone or something, I think I'm on. I think I might have got that right. That's what medicine I'm on at the moment. I think it's like a type of a steroid. For the lungs and stuff like that, for the infection, helping fight the infection. I made sure that obviously I'm allowed to take it with USADA and all, so that's all good. Well, the UFC doctor actually, I'm pretty sure he's the main doctor, he's the owner of this hospital, so they're all aware of USADA and whatnot, so I don't need to worry about that.
Okay, here is my takeaway from that, Daniel. You're fighting off what we know is a deadly disease. And you're sitting there and you're having to consult USADA whether or not you can take this steroid? What the fuck?
Yeah, I mean, in a life or death situation, there should absolutely be exemptions for literally anything on the USADA ban list. I mean, that should be the furthest thing from a fighter's mind, you know. And this doesn't have to be like a COVID thing. Like, think back to all of the random stuff that Santiago Ponzinibbio went through that sounded super scary. I mean, fighters, if they get a bad draw, are going to, you know, a couple of them may face these situations where the last thing on their mind has to be whether or not what the doctor recommending you is on the USADA list. I mean, clearly, there needs to be a little bit more malleability, a little bit more adjustability with USADA, where when we're dealing with a life and death situation, and this is a very serious situation, and it's really insane that, you know, literally the featherweight champion of the world was coughing up blood and had to be hospitalized for COVID. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, we've seen other athletes in different sports have serious complications of COVID, but we're talking about the best featherweight in the world, according to the UFC. That's a crazy way of putting it, that this guy who's such a phenomenal athlete had this struggle, and he's not the only one. Obviously, it nearly forced Chimaev to retire, you know, until his dictator was like, no, you're not retiring.
Like there's so many things I just wonder, like, what if, and for those who are not aware, Dr. Davidson, you know, well-respected doctor, he's a UFC doctor. He's pretty much a doctor that everyone goes to in Vegas. Every UFC fighter goes to in Vegas. Like, what happens if he comes back and says, hey, sorry, Alex, it's on the ban list, USADA. Like, there should have been someone in his camp going, you know what, Alex, don't worry about it. Just, this is about your personal safety. F USADA at that point. Could you imagine USADA goes, oh, hey, Alex, we're suspending you 2 years because, well, yeah, we know you were fighting a deadly disease, but you took a banned substance. Like, it's unfortunate. I think it just kind of shows, I think how scared fighters are of USADA. But B, I think it also kind of shows that they've got too much power in this game, that's even on a fighter's mindset when you're sitting in laying in a hospital bed fighting COVID.
Yeah, you'd rather be alive with a positive test than dead with a negative one. I mean, it's as simple as that. You can live to fight another day if you get a USADA suspension. And not like USADA was threatening to suspend him or anything like that.
Yeah, yeah.
But the fact that it was on his mind is the problem here. Is the crux of the story. And it's an interesting tidbit to hone in on. And I'm grateful that he let us in on so many of the intricacies of what he's going on, because had he not done this, had he not spoken about this, this would not have been a story. We would not have been aware of this, and we would have just been ho hum. He tested positive and he's back at it again. And, you know, I think that really helps, where maybe there's some people who are influenced by this story and take more precautions or whatnot, because it's one thing to when you're my age or your age, when you're not 65 plus, you might think you're invincible. Mm-hmm. But when the featherweight champion of the world isn't, it does a good job of educating and communicating that story. But I just It's crazy. And it's really good that he had the resources that he did have, because he had a lot of resources at his availability to fight this and be aware of what his health conditions were in real time. You know, he had that oxygen meter that let him know when his oxygen was low enough to where he needed to make that return visit to his hospital. And then, I believe his was it his nutritionist, someone or close to
correct,
him
knew yeah.
a lot about the disease. So, I mean, he had a lot of resources available. He was able to fight and battle back. But, damn, what a harrowing story. And I guess it makes a lot of sense in the world that he is going to be on The Ultimate Fighter. I mean, I probably won't be watching. You know, Volkanovski Ortega doesn't get me interested. But,
I mean, you know. What? Like, this is the thing, and like, I was listening to the co-main event podcast yesterday while I was walking my dog, and, you know, and Ben and Chad were kind of talking about this. Like, what wrinkle is it going to take for a long-time mixed martial arts fan to turn on ESPN Plus and watch it? Now, you know, just because of – I have not actively watched a season of The Ultimate Fighter since the ATT Black Zillion season, which I believe was season 21. If I'm right, this is season 29 coming up. So that kind of gives you an idea how long it's been since unless there's like a fighter on the show that, you know, I've interviewed over the years, that would be my only reason. I don't see, like, to me, I would much rather them do retired fighters as coaches. I mean, obviously in this situation, it makes a ton of sense with Volkanovski recovering from COVID, but I'll tell you, to me, the biggest loser of Volkanovski and Ortega becoming coaches on The Ultimate Fighter is to beat Magomed Sharipov, because his team had made it very well known they were looking for a title fight. Well, now you're going to have to take a fight. And I just kind of feel like the UFC is going to look at Zabit and his team and go, all right, we're going to put you in a 5-round fight. Max Holloway, let's see what you can do for 25 minutes. And I think that's an awful matchup for Magomed Sharipov.
Yeah, I mean, at some point or another, he's going to have to face the demon, which is being in championship rounds. I mean, that's what his next fight's probably going to be, 5 rounds, unless he's hidden on a pay-per-view, unless he's hidden under some championship bouts. It's going to be a 5-rounder. And again, the Holloway fight is what makes the most sense. I mean, that's kind of a no-brainer in terms of, all right, let's put these two in the cage. So I think that's certainly next. You're right. He's the biggest loser in that there is no waiting game, because the wait is just going to be too damn long. I mean, look, at the end of the day, The Ultimate Fighter, let's put it out of its misery. But, I mean, if you're brainstorming for ideas of how to get eyeballs on the product, I don't really know what it would be other than elevating the stakes in terms of, like, maybe you have the season consist of current UFC fighters and the winner gets a title fight and the coaches are retired fighters. Like, that might be – and the payday has to just be, yeah, like, every fight has to be a show fight. You know, like a fight night payday. That to me would be the one way of maybe doing it. And all the fights are live, kind of like how they did on that. I mean, I just feel like that's one of the ways, and I don't even know if that would work. But you could possibly make a star if you do it that way, where if you take fighters that are ranked like 12 through 24 and you put them on a show. But I don't even know if that would work. I mean, yeah, they crowned a damn women's champion on a season and no one cared. So yeah, it's there's just more interest in the contender series than there is on this show.
And that's why I would say, like, if you're a fighter, you'd much rather just go on the contender series, because then you're not subjecting yourself to living in a house with, you know, what, 20 other people that you have no idea who they are. And it's a reality show, and you know that you don't want to be that guy or that lady that does something stupid because, you know, you decide to, you know, sit there and get hammered. I mean, like, I'll give you a perfect example of this. Like, Maurice Greene, who I've had a chance to interview a bunch of times, what everyone remembers about Maurice Greene was him smoking cigarettes. Maurice told me a year ago that he stopped smoking. But every time you hear someone break down a Maurice Greene fight, that is the thing that comes up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it's like there's certain things you're just not going to, if you have that one bad night, it's probably something you're never going to be able to get past.
I mean, you will never not look at Julian Lane and think, let me bang, bro. I mean, that is
his reputation. Here's my question. I hope he trademarked that.
Yeah, I hope he did too. I don't know who would buy that shirt. Like, who's going to literally buy it and wear it? But, I mean, it's definitely one of the most iconic. Yeah.
It's MMA.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Like, look, if we were in Jacksonville on April the 24th, outside of whatever that arena's name is called, you know, Memorial Coliseum, whatever it is, and we had, like, let's just say we brought a 500, let me bring both shirts. Let's just say we sell them for $15. I bet we sell every single one of them.
I think so. I think if we have Julian Lane there with us taking selfies with everyone who buys one, I think we absolutely will sell out. I mean, it's a funny shirt. I just think it's one of those things where you buy it and you're like, wait, where am I wearing this to?
Okay, like, all right. Like, could you imagine you got that one of your boys and they roll out to the bar with that on?
Yeah.
What's the odds someone tries to fight him at some point?
Either fight him or fornicate with him. I mean, the Let Me Bang Bro has a double connotation. I mean, for someone who's not an MMA fan, for someone who's not an MMA fan, which is most people in a bar setting, they're not going to understand what that means.
I didn't think of it that way, but now it just came to me. Like, what imagine, like, you're wearing a Let Me Bang Bro shirt. You walk up to try to, you know, spit some game on a lady, and she looks at your shirt and goes, nice knowing you.
Yeah, there's no, if you're trying to do that to a lady and she's into it, then you need to run away because she's got a screw loose or she's got something wrong. Because yeah, I mean, that shirt alone is birth control. It's really cheap birth control because I mean, no one would want to, you know, get with a person wearing a Let Me Bang Bro shirt, even if you have a purple mohawk.
Like, you think when Julian Lane, I think he lives up in the Philadelphia area. You think he just walk, if he walks into like, you know, like, you ever go to Moe's?
No, I've never. I don't even know what Moe's is. They haven't made it to my area.
Moe's is a burrito place. So when you walk in, the employees say, welcome to Moe's. They chant it out. Do you think, like, if Julian Lane walks into a bar, that everyone just chants, let me bang, bro?
I'm sure he's gotten it a lot, especially when he's going out clubbing. But yeah, I mean, again, it case in point, he is the Let Me Bang Bro forever and ever, and it's all because of that. When you think of Junie Browning, all you can think of is his meltdown on The Ultimate Fighter, yeah, and how crazy he was, and the list goes on. It goes on and on, going all the way back to the very first season with Bobby Southworth and Chris Lieben, and I can't remember who peed on who, but who was it? Somebody was in a sleeping bag and somebody peed on somebody. Bobby Southworth peed on Chris Lieben, right?
I feel like if Twitter was around back then, that which would have been a viral clip. You would have seen that on your timeline 24/7.
He would have been canceled.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, yeah.
He did pee on him. He literally peed on him. That's insane. I mean, Jesus. Can you imagine? Yeah, people were crazy, you know.
Yeah.
Was it 15 years ago? 16 years ago?
Well, that would be what, 2005?
Yeah, 2004, 2005.
Yeah, I mean, in that range?
Yeah, that's crazy to think. 16 years ago, damn.
Yeah, and who would have thought that, you know, 16 years later, everything you're watching MMA is streaming? That's the world we live in. You know, speaking of streaming, of course, Bellator last week, they were first event on Showtime. They showed for free on YouTube. That was awesome that Bellator and Showtime did that. I actually I went ahead and did the $4.99 a month, you know, 30-day free trial. The only thing negative, and I'll tell you, I text someone in Bellator. I said, hey, great show tonight. The only negative thing I could say is, so I put the card on my Apple TV on the Showtime app about 15 minutes to broadcast. Well, because, well, I knew the first 15 minutes was like going to be filler content. And right as they're introducing Emmanuel Sanchez, pop-up window comes up on the screen. Are you still watching? All right, come on, Showtime. Can we put a little longer delay on that with the MMA show? Make that delay like 4 hours instead of three.
Yeah. At least do the whole running time, because I mean, as soon as you put it up, you're not messing with it.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's really bad timing. I mean, yeah. But at least, you know, that's a minor hiccup that they got to work on. But I mean, I don't even know why the damn apps even ask us those questions. Like, Like, why? Like you, I'm not paying you any more to not watch. Like, I should just be watching consistently. Like there's no reason why you need to stop my viewing experience, Netflix. But, you know, it was a fun card. You know, no complaints from me. I enjoyed the Showtime broadcast. It was fun to watch the whole show without commercials. The pacing was fine. I mean, you had a lot of filler in between each fight, but you had to educate viewers on who was fighting and what the stakes were. There was no amazing fight, but there were plenty of good performances. Obviously, Patricio Pitbull came to play, and he impressed in a quick way, rocking Emmanuel and then tapping him out. And you know, Pitbull and AJ McKee's the fight to make. Neiman Gracie and Jason Jackson. I actually thought Neiman Gracie won that fight, Jason. I don't know.
Really?
I thought he won.
Here's the way I would describe that fight. If I had to describe that fight in one word, weird.
Yeah, well, because it all comes down to the fight turn in that first round when Jason is on top, or I don't even know if he's on top, but he's like he kind of gets him down and he gets his eyelid caught in the cage, and that's and so I think I scored the. I'm just trying to recall. I believe I gave Gracie round one and round two because it felt like it took Jason a little bit to like. Get into the like as soon as that happened, he immediately gave up position, and the commentators noticed something weird when it happened.
I just felt Neiman did not take advantage of the opportunities he had where Jason Jackson did, and I thought Jason Jackson landed the more damaging blows in the fight.
Yeah, yeah, and I thought round three, you know, when I watched the fight, Jason felt like the better fighter. I just felt like in rounds one and two, Jason was more. It just did less than Gracie, mm-hmm. But I thought it was close, and it wasn't even like the other one. I was surprised that one judge gave it 29-28 for Alejandro Lara in the opener against Kano Watanabe. That because that was another situation where I was more confident that when Watanabe went in that one 28. But you know those two fights, the Lara Watanabe Jackson Gracie. I feel like if those fights were a little bit more better, like then we're talking about like a. Two thumbs up show. This is just a solid, like, this was a solid broadcast, but, you know, nothing to write home about. You know, Usman looked good, but, you know, Mike Hamill is just not the guy you want to put up against your prospect if you're Bellator because he'll make him look vulnerable. You know, he did it to Adam Borax, and he did it to Nurmagomedov, where he's just a tough fight for anyone at lightweight.
Look, he's one of those guys, like, we mentioned it back in December. Cameron Lachinoff is one of those guys as well. Is he's coming to fight, and that's got to be Scott Coker's dream fighter. Is you know, no matter what, that those guys are coming to fight, and those are the type of guys that you want on your roster. I mean, look, Usman Nurmagomedov looked great in the fight, just the way he was mixing up his strikes, did a beautiful job. Mike Hamill was just a tough SOB who just kept coming. You know, give me more of Mike Hamill in Bellator. Yeah, you know, the only thing I would say about Watanabe is, you know, obviously you saw the deficiencies when the fight's on the feet. And I just thought Lara overextended herself and found herself in bad positions. But a clear win for her. Tyrell Fortune looked great. You know, Patricio Pitbull just once again showed why he's the greatest fighter in Bellator history, and you just see how he has evolved as a fighter where he's not that, you know, if you look back in his early days in Bellator, he was just that super aggressive fighter, would take a ton of chances, where now you watch him fight and he's just very strategic on when he goes in there and we get the fight that we want to see in the finals. It necessarily does not always happen in these tournament situations where, you know, the brackets just work themselves out. You get the fight that you want. And Patricio Pitbull, AJ McKee, there's talks June, July is when that fight's going to happen. You know, sign me up for that one. Chris Gonzalez looked good against Roger Huerta. I think people in Roger Huerta around him need to probably have a serious conversation with Roger about the future. Mando Nala looked good. Magomedov, he looked good as well. Augusto, someone definitely pay attention there at 205 pounds. Overall, I thought it was a pretty good Bellator card. It was great to have Bellator back. But you know, to me, it all comes down to what Patricio Pitbull was able to do. And for Emmanuel Sanchez, you're now in this position. You've lost to Patricio twice. And I don't know what the path is for him to get a third fight at this point.
I mean, for Emmanuel Sanchez, it's almost like he should just go to the UFC at this point, you know, just because, like, you know, there's no way, unless AJ McKee, you know, wins the title, then I guess it freshens things up a little bit. But when you lose to someone twice, it's almost like, damn, because like, Emmanuel's really good. And again, Patricio's just an otherworldly talent for Patricio Pitbull. I think there's a lot on the line in the AJ McKee fight. If he runs through AJ McKee, I mean, the conversation will absolutely be whether or not Patricio is the number one 145er on the planet. You can obviously already make the case, but if he runs through AJ, I think that will be the prevailing narrative, because he's certainly at that situation where Patricio Pitbull is an absolute killer in every aspect of the game. And as you mentioned, he continues to be mentally mature and making the best decisions to win said fight. Like, if you put him in the cage against Volkanovski, I'm probably picking Patricio Pitbull.
Okay. I think it's all matchup dependent on, you know, look, Patricio is one of the top 145ers in the world. And I think it's a legitimate question to ask, is he the best 145er? If Patricio's matched up against Max Holloway, do you pick Patricio?
I'd pick Holloway. I would pick Holloway over Patricio. I would pick Patricio over Volkanovski. I think Ortega's an interesting matchup, because there's a part of me that thinks Brian Ortega might like be might have has like elevated himself another level. I'm just interested to see him fight for the title. And then Zabit is another one where I'm probably picking Patricio, but again, it's pretty close.
And, you know, look, if you're team Patricio Pitbull right now, you are the biggest Michael Chandler fans there are. Mm-hmm. Because if Michael Chandler wins the UFC lightweight title next month, what's that mean about Patricio Pitbull with what he did to Michael Chandler?
I mean, Patricio should have, you know, when you look at what he did to Michael Chandler, it's like, damn, he could have been the UFC getting a Conor McGregor fight at this point. I mean, you know, if he has a win over the current UFC lightweight champion where he completely ran through him and winning his title, it's like the Patricio Pitbull becomes like a serious part of like the best fighter on the planet discussion. And he's still a ways away. And I think the things that hurt him with that discussion is the loss back in the days to Strauss and Pat Curran. I mean, if this is a guy who just has a 24 fight unbeaten streak, today we're talking about Patricio as like a top 5 pound for pound fighter. And now this is a guy who's on the peripheral of that discussion. But again, I mean, you know, he's got to get through AJ McKee, and that's going to be an exceptional challenge. I thought AJ did a good job on the panel of the broadcast with Josh Thompson and Jen Brown. And, yeah, I'm looking forward to getting this Bellator broadcast as a steady diet in my life. You know, I really enjoy it, and I'm glad we're ramping out these cards one after another.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit about Bellator 256 here in a moment, but do want to let you know this episode of the MMA Report podcast is powered by Adam and Eve. Free stuff is awesome, but free stuff to spice up your bedroom is even better. You got to head over to adamandeve.com. Maybe you want to pick up some lingerie for your lady. Maybe you want to pick up some other things. You got to check out our sponsor, Adam and Eve.
You guys owe it to yourself to check out Adam and Eve. There's a reason why Adam and Eve is the number one adult toy superstore. And, dude, they put the super in superstore. They have everything to make your sex life go from here all the way up here above the screen. All right, you have anything and anything you want. As you mentioned, for him or for her, you have all kinds of accessories, all kinds of wardrobe. You can grab your condoms when you're there. You can play some sex games. There's books and CDs. There's a sex swing. You can even buy batteries, cologne, and perfume. You got to check out the Motor Bunny sex machine. It has 5 stars on the website, and Adam and Eve is my favorite place to go. Go to adamandeve.com, please.
Visit adamandeve.com and select almost any one item for 50% off. Then Adam and Eve loads on the free stuff. Enter offer code MMA at checkout and get 10 tantalizing free gifts. A sexy item for him, a special gift for her, and a third item you'll both enjoy. And 6 free spicy movies plus free shipping. That's MMA. MMA, offer code MMA at checkout at adamandeve.com. MMAFighters.com. Now, Daniel, we're loaded up this weekend for MMA coverage. We've got Bellator on Friday night and a afternoon UFC card on Saturday, prelim starting at 12 p.m. Eastern time, 3 p.m. on the East Coast. And that main card will be on ABC. Let's first off talk about the Bellator event. Since that is on Friday, it is the kickoff of the Bellator Light Heavyweight Tournament. Ryan Bader versus Lyoto Machida. Also this card, we got Liz Carmouche taking on Vanessa Porto. You got to imagine Liz Carmouche. This is probably a number one contender fight there at 125 pounds. Adam Porex versus Jeremy Kinney. Kat Zingano taking on Olivia Parker. Kochi Yamauchi's taking on Dan Moret. Some notable fights on the preliminary card that I'll mention. Matchup Dalton Ross to Tony Johnson. That one's got my eyes. Cody Law. Remember that name. Cody Law is a guy to pay attention to. Also, interesting matchup between Cass Bell and Jornell Lugo there at bantamweight. And I'll mention Nainoa Dung. Actually had him on the podcast on Sunday. You could check that out. The most interesting part about the conversation I had with Nainoa, and I've interviewed him now a couple of times, is he essentially, I took it to what he said is, I signed with Bellator very early on my career, and it almost kind of sounded like that maybe he understands maybe that was a mistake, that he's had, he's only 22 years old and he's growing up in Bellator, and so he's someone I'm definitely paying attention to, and you could definitely tell his mindset is definitely different, heading into this one. But, we talked about earlier about, the featherweight tournament of Pitbull and AJ McKee was the ideal tournament final. And then I was thinking about the Bellator light heavyweight tournament final, which I was thinking when I look at this tournament, I'm sitting there going, okay, what is the ideal final when we're talking about this? And so I pulled up the bracket, Daniel. And so on one side of the bracket, you have got Vadim Nemkov, who's taking on Phil Davis. That's on April the 16th. And then you've got Anthony Johnson taking on Ryo Romero. Then on the other side of the bracket, you've got Ryan Bader taking on Machida. And then Corey Anderson taking on the fighter that I'm not even going to attempt to butcher his name. And so I'm sitting there thinking, like, if you're Bellator, what's the ideal final? I think it's Vadim Nemkov versus Corey Anderson.
Why do you think it's that fight?
So when Corey Anderson left the UFC, he was what? Top three, top four? His most recent loss would be to Jan Blachowicz, the UFC light heavyweight champion. And I think it's got to be about profiling your current champion. I mean, look, the fight everyone wants to see is Rumble and Romero. I'm kind of surprised they didn't try to put Nemkov on the other side of the bracket and potentially have the Rumble Romero winner eventually fight him in the final, saying they both get there.
Yeah. I think the theoretical final would have been Nemkov versus like Rumble or Nemkov versus Romero. I get why you're putting Anderson in that final slot. I mean, he's just younger than everyone else in the bracket. I think if you're looking for which final will get the biggest rating, not long term, what if we get the Dragon in the final? All right, the Dragon comes out, and I know it's not going to happen. My man is almost, like he's like 42 years old. But let's say Lyoto takes a swig at that piss, and he knocks out Bader, and then he knocks out Corey Anderson, and our man, the Dragon, is in the final, and he's taking on like Anthony Johnson, and we have Anthony Johnson and the Dragon. I think that's a ratings bonanza, Jason, if we can tell the story of Lyoto. Because the thing is, Lyoto Machida, to me, is the most interesting person on his side of the bracket, even though he's definitely going to lose to Bader. It's just like when I think of Corey and when I think of Bader, all I can think of is just takedowns. And I know Bader has the knockout ability, but still.
Yeah, so, by the way, kudos for landing Lyoto Machida's age of 42. He turns 43 on May the 30th, so I expect Bader to win. Think about this, okay? The last time Lyoto Machida won a fight was June 14th of 2019. If we want to go back to the start of 2014, Lyoto Machida has won he's won six fights. The wins against Gegard Mousasi, which by far is the best win in this stretch. CB Dolloway, Eric Anders, Vitor Belfort, Rafael Carvalho, and Shel Sonnen. Who is the bet? Who's the number two win in that stretch?
Oh man, I think it's Eric Anders. Yeah, I mean, it's either that or.
I mean, just think about the version they fought at that point. Yeah, I mean,
CB Dolloway, maybe. Obviously, you know, you go back 2 years before that and you beat Ryan Bader. But, you know, things have changed dramatically ever since Lyoto first won that title. You know, and again, I just, it's more of one of those things when I'm looking at who is the most, like if we said this guy is going to go on a magical run, who would get the most audience? And I would still tell you Lyoto would get a bigger audience than Bader, Corey, or... I can't do it. But...
I feel bad for Michael C. Williams because that's why I just want to do an interview with Michael C. Williams. Go, all right, Mike, how many times have you practiced this name?
Oh, yeah, and he'll nail it, and we're going to take some notes, and we'll... I'll try my best. But Corey's like the guy who's like the long-term guy on that side of the bracket. And then Vadim's the long-term guy on the right side of the bracket. It's just that Ed Johnson or Romero is the more known guy to the casual. So it's kind of that thing when you're picking the ideal final, it's what are you going for? Are you going for a final that gets the best possible rating or a final that's best for you long-term, that these two guys get attention and these are your champions? So I think Nemkov Anderson's probably the correct answer. But if I was to lock in, if I'm Bellator, which fight would I most want in the final? I would probably go with Corey Anderson versus Anthony Johnson. I want Anthony Johnson to come out of nowhere and like be one of the best fighters on the planet. Probably won't happen, but you know, he left the sport at a point where he was still a top 10 fighter.
Yeah, I mean, my question with Rumble Johnson is just 4 years away from the sport. What's he going to look like? That to me is the biggest question. So, by the way, so I looked this up. So, Machida and Bader, they fought back on August the 4th, 2012. UFC on Fox number 4. The TV prelims were on Fuel TV, by the way, back in those days. Your main event was Shogun Hua versus Brandon Vera.
And Shogun won via leg kicks, right?
In the fourth round. Also on that card, you had Joe Lozone defeated Jamie Varner. Mike Swick defeated DeMarcus Johnson.
Dang, Jamie Varner really fell after that loss.
And by the way, Phil Davis was on that card where that was a no contest with the eye poke against Wagner Prado.
I could have sworn Phil Davis was like the main event of UFC on Fox 2, but I'm probably thinking of a different fight card.
I want to say, wasn't that like a January card that he headlined, I want to say?
Let me see. Which one did he headline? He headlined...
UFC on Fox 2 against Rashard Evans.
Oh, he did. So, my man fought... Oh, because these things were more spaced out. Let's see, because UFC on Fox 2 is January. And then... Oh, I'm bad. I'm not operating Wikipedia well at all. And then... UFC on Fox was in August. This was the fourth one. So the UFC on Fox 4 was in August. The second one was in January.
This is the crazy thing about Phil Davis. He's approaching his 6-year anniversary in Bellator.
That is crazy. Time has passed tremendously fast.
He made his Bellator debut in 2015.
That's amazing. It makes you feel old, doesn't it? Yeah. I mean, he's probably spent more time in Bellator than he has in the UFC at this point.
Because,
I mean, yeah.
So, okay, Nemkov is my pick to win the tournament. Mm-hmm. Now, you hit the heavyweight tournament last time with Bader. I think I picked Matt Mitrione. That didn't work out too well for me.
That was a bad pick for sure. crap, this is a tough one. Because I think Nemkov's absolutely the best fighter on this tournament. But I don't want to pick the same guy as you.
Yeah, look, if I was going to go with another pick, I would go Corey Anderson. But what does concern me is him taking on strikers that can stop a takedown, a.k.a. Ryan Bader.
Screw it. I'm going to go with Ryan Bader to win the light heavyweight tournament. Screw it. I'm going to go with Ryan Bader. Look, at the end of the day, I don't know how I can watch Nemkov versus Bader the first time and think Bader's going to beat him, right? Like, I can't in good faith. But my logic here is Bader has the easiest, has like a way easier path to the final than like either Nemkov or the winner of Johnson or Romero. Like the fact that they have to face each other in the semifinals, and I think, yeah, I'm going to go with Bader. But it's a tough one. I don't feel good about it. I mean, Johnson or Romero could absolutely win this tournament too.
Yeah. By the way, speaking of this card, so Adam Borix is on this card, and I couldn't believe this. I'm a voting member of the Bellator rankings. I could not believe that Adam Borix is ranked number 3 overall in the Bellator fighter rankings.
Yeah. I mean, we talked about that, and it's crazy. And did he move up?
Basically. No, he has not moved up. So I've got the email in front of me. So looking at the fighters that moved up this week, Tyrell Fortune moved up 2 spots to number 4 at heavyweight. Amosov moved up 1 spot to the number 1 spot at welterweight. Jason Jackson moved up 3 spots. He's now at number 3. Magomedov moved up 1 spot at bantamweight. He is number 4. And Watanabe, she moved up 1 spot. But I was looking at Adam Borix, and when you look at his best wins in Bellator, obviously you go back to, his wins earlier on when he got the win against Pat Curran and Aaron Pico. But if you look at his other wins in Bellator, Eric Sanchez, Mike Hamill, Joselindo Silva, and Theodore Nikolaev and Anthony Taylor.
Yeah.
Doesn't scream number. Because I remember when, I did my rankings like last Sunday. And then when I got the email, I was like, Borix number 3 still? And I'm like, he doesn't have a top 5 win. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you put him over a guy like Pedro Carvalho? How do you put him over a guy like Daniel Veitchel?
It's a tough one. It's a tough one, and I don't get it either, and I don't agree with it. You know, it's an opportunity to justify that ranking against Jeremy Kennedy. I mean, that's a great fight, and he may return to form. But, I mean, his most recent performance is a fight he very well could have lost when he took on Mike Hamill if he had different judges. That was a close fight that could have gone either way. And, again, Mike Hamill is gaining credibility every time he fights, so maybe Hamill's just a tough dog to fight against. But, yeah, the idea of Adam being number 3 is just, like, I don't know if he had enough wins before his initial loss in Bellator to justify being number 3 when you, again, contrast him with someone who's more of a steadier dog like Daniel Weigel, who's beaten more consistently good Bellator featherweights. For Adam Borix, a win over Jeremy Kennedy would be one of those wins. And again, I think he's going to get that win, but it's been a good while since we've seen, and again, a big part of the reason why it's been a good while is because of the pandemic, but it's been a good while since we've seen Adam Borix perform at that top-level prospect that he displayed. Because, on the way to the tournament, Adam looked like a guy who would be a championship contender, and he may just be that, but I feel like we're rewarding him before he's truly proven it against some of those top 10 of Bellator featherweights. And again, that's why his matchup on the main card, to me, is probably the second most interesting fight on that card.
Kat Zingano, we now know Chris Cyborg is going to defend her title against Leslie Smith. Of course, they fought each other in the UFC. That's going to be, I want to say it's May 21st. This is definitely a showcase fight for Kat Zingano. I will say this, though. There have been fighters who have come in from Valor Fighting Challenge as the quote-unquote B-side of the fight that have spoiled the A-side of the fight's plan. The one that really sticks out to me is Corey Browning. They brought him in twice. One time against Baby Slice and another time against Aaron Chalmers over in Europe. And Corey Browning won both of those fights. But that should be a Kat Zingano showcase fight. You'd have to imagine a notable win by Kat here. You'd have to think. Puts her to get the winner of Chris Cyborg, Leslie Smith. Or I should just say gets Chris Cyborg.
Yeah. Although I tell you what, that was interesting that they flew both of them out there. I don't know if they had to fly them out there, but
They're both from California.
Okay. Yeah. So they just flew out there just to have like a little stare down. That was funny, but hey man, I guess the Bellator budget is balling, but yeah, I mean, that was nice. The thing is, it's cool because when you watch that, And if you're a casual fan, you watch the broadcast, you see that, and you think, wow, that's a big fight. And I'm excited to see it. And so, yeah, that's good. And I think, yeah, I think Cyborg, you know, cash those paychecks. I think Cyborg probably has 5 title defenses in her in terms of just dominating her opponents. I think she'll probably call it a career because this is someone who's been a part of our lives since those Strikeforce days, right? Like when Mauro was calling the very first main card fight, Watanabe and Laura, he was talking about how on the very first Strikeforce Showtime fight, Gina Carano and Julie Kedzie were, you know, and it was an amazing barn burner. And during that time period is the era in which Cyborg dominated. And she's still dominating. Like, that seems like so long ago. We're talking about UFC on Fox 2. We're talking about all this stuff. During that period is when Cyborg was the best female fighter of all time. And so it's like, at some point, Cyborg is going to lose. But it helps that she's taking on people who are also a part of that same generation, too. Like, Leslie Smith and Zingano are a part of that generation. But yeah, I think it's her division, but yeah, Zingano's going to run through. I mean, the Porto Carmouche fight is much more interesting. I mean, Porto's a legit flyweight that could absolutely pull off the win. I'm not picking her, but I mean, the jiu-jitsu's there, the stand-up's there, not the most entertaining fighter as is Carmouche. I'm not going to like run to the TV screen to watch it, but that's still like a compelling co-main event.
And interesting that Bellator was able to get her instead of her signing with the UFC. On Thursday, the weigh-ins will be interesting with Gochi Yamauchi after he missed weight last time. Fight did not happen. I do know that he had to go through the entire process to show that it is healthy for him to make 155 pounds. That one does interest me there as well. On Saturday, we've got the UFC on ABC card. And this will be the first time we see fighters in the new UFC uniform sponsored by Venom. You made a great point to me when we were texting a little earlier. It's a cleaner look than I think the Reebok. But the thing that really stuck out to me is the Venom logo seems so small in those shorts.
Yeah, it looks so small. I like it more. It's a smoother design for sure. But it seems like they did. It just seems kind of close to Reebok too. I hate uniforms now. I hate it. I tell you why. I miss the days when everyone had unique gear. I miss the days of Anderson Silva's gear. And when I saw the Venom thing, I was just like, this is so boring, Jason. No. It looks better, but it looks the same.
Now here's the funniest thing about it. You know, the UFC wanted this cleaner look. They didn't want all these logos. But there's literally a logo on every inch of that octagon.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's where the UFC made the money, right? Like the UFC, dude, it's so crazy how messed up the Reebok deal is for the fighters. Like, the UFC's like, oh, you know all that money you're making on the trunks? Yeah, we're going to take that away from you. We're going to sign this Reebok deal and tell you we're giving you all the Reebok money. And we're going to take all the money you were making on your shorts and we're going to put it on our canvas. And we're going to make that money. Like, bro, that was crazy how much money the UFC took out of the fighters' pockets. That was like, it's the UFC. The UFC can do whatever the hell they want. They're the UFC. They run the show. But, bro, like, the UFC screwed the fighters big time when they signed that Reebok deal. And it continues with the Venom deal. Like, I don't want to hear about a pay raise. It's a minuscule pay, like, what, $2,000, something like that? This whole ad, like, I get why the UFC is doing it because it's all about screwing over the fighters and making the most money and selling your stock shares. But I miss the days when the fighters could design their own uniform. It made them look unique.
Well, I believe it's on Friday. The next action in the class action lawsuit is going to happen where it sounds like we're going to get some previously sealed documents are going to be unsealed, and this will be part of the lawsuit getting class certified. And one of the rumblings that has been thrown out there on social media is that there is going to be some documents that get unsealed that make some managers look very bad.
Well, I'm looking forward to it, man. I'm looking forward to that information. And it's good that it's getting out there, man, because, you know, ignorance is taking money out of the pocket of fighters. It's as simple as that. And the more info you have, the better case you can make to get a better payday. You know, ever since, like, you know, it's just been a bad ball game for the UFC fighters. I mean, we've had a crooked umpire calling balls and strikes when it comes to trying to get the best possible payday. And I'm looking forward to seeing more information come out for sure.
So, of course, our main event on Saturday was supposed to be Darren Till taking on Marvin Vettori. Of course, Darren Till pulled out of the fight 10 days ago, and Kevin Holland steps in. I just want to read you this quote from a couple weeks ago. "I think that was a mental breakdown. The only thing I saw like it was in boxing when Lennox Lewis fought that other guy who kept his hands at his side and was crying. I don't know what he was doing. I think he might not be able to handle the pressure and just mentally broke. I haven't seen anything like that." And that was Dana White answering a Kevin Ioli question about Kevin Holland's performance against Derek Brunson just, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
Hey, Kevin, you need a short notice fight? Come on in.
I'm gonna freaking trash you in the press fight presser, and now I'm gonna love you. You're gonna make history and main event two shows in 21 days that we have only seen what from Michael Bisping and Davison Figueiredo, I believe was the other one.
Right.
You know, this is a bad situation or not a bad situation. It, like, if Kevin Holland loses, it's like, well, of course he lost, because, like, he took this fight on short notice. But it's a bad situation. Like, I think this has got to be so tough to come off that Brunson loss and come back and fight against Marvin Vettori. But Kevin Holland is the type of person, if there is a type of person, that is made for this situation. I mean, this is how he got his name on the radar. That's how he literally had a borderline fighter of the year case in 2020. And so I could absolutely see Holland turning the course and getting like a knockout win here. But my pick in the main event is still Marvin Vettori.
Oh, yeah.
because it's pretty simple. He can out wrestle him like nothing. And I think that's exactly what's going to happen.
I feel like this is just going to be round six of Derek Brunson, Kevin Holland.
But don't forget, Kevin Holland, like, basically knocked out Jacare from his back.
He did.
He does have that.
Look, like, this is a fight for Vettori. I don't know what he can really gain from this one. I feel like he just has to one-up Derek Brunson. But, if he decides he wants to take this to take down City, he can easily win. He's approaching a 3.5-1 betting favorite in this one. I thought it was going to be a very interesting matchup against Darren Till. But, I mean, look, Kevin Holland can win this fight. There's no question about it. But I think the problem becomes is if Marvin Vettori wants to take this fight to the ground, I just don't know what Kevin Holland can do. But it will be interesting. There's a reason Dana White gave Kevin Holland the nickname, Loudmouth?
Yeah, something like that. Yeah,
Big Mouth.
Yeah.
So it's on ABC. If you're Kevin Holland, do you just keep rolling with it, or do you just fight?
Well, I feel bad for Kevin Holland's going to keep rolling with it. I don't think he's going to make that adjustment. But yeah, I feel bad for the censor person on ABC. Gotta hold your finger over that censor if you want to hear that on the microphones. But Kevin Holland has an opportunity to absolutely be like. Like, if there's, like, when you look at this main card, I think Kevin Holland and Mackenzie Dern would probably be the 1-2 in terms of most potential to break out as a star on this platform. Those would be the two fighters I would look at to be like, they could have an amazing night and become a star on this huge network platform.
I was shocked that Mackenzie Dern is right now a +120 underdog. Here's a crazy thing. So if you go on bestfightodds.com, so I'm looking at five times. Back on February 22nd, Mackenzie Dern was a -300 betting favorite.
That's crazy. I wonder if there's something that, because to me that almost reads like smart money.
That tells me the oddsmakers clearly put out a bad price.
Yeah,
that's a crazy line move. But I was just, it's Nina's first fight since having her child, so. you know, what does she look like in this one? You know, especially what happens if this fight hits the mat in terms of, you know, obviously you don't want to get into a jiu-jitsu matchup with Mackenzie Dern. I just, when I saw that betting odds, it surprised me. I do love the co-main event of Arnold Allen and Sadiq Youssef. Mike Perry, Daniel Rodriguez, I don't see how that fight sucks. I think that's going to be just two guys to go out there. Now, maybe Mike Perry does try to make it, you know, try to make this more of a grappling fight, doesn't try to get as many exchanges as possible. I talked to Joe Selecki taking on Jim Miller. You know, that's obviously, you can never count out Jim Miller. He's a favorite in that one. But overall, it's an okay fight night card top to bottom.
Yeah, it doesn't scream to me network TV.
Yeah.
I mean the best fight on the fight card is the co-main event between Allen and Youssef. I mean, this is a fight between two guys who have had a lot of success at 145, and I think they're going to find themselves in a big fight with their next fight. Whoever wins this one is going to get a tough, tough top featherweight fight. So that's the best fight. Dern Ansarov's interesting. I mean, Dern's my pick. But, I mean, Alves and Marquez is kind of a rough fight to put on your main card on ABC. As is, you know, this dude, Kizraev, I'm interested to see him take on Dawkus. So that's also an interesting 185 fight. Is that fight canceled?
It's canceled.
Dang it. There we go. Drink one for the – it's been a while.
It got canceled earlier today. I want to say it's COVID-related.
I was hyped for that fight because I was hyped to see Kizraev. But
once again, shows Daniel doesn't look at the run sheet. That's
something. I love Wikipedia. It's like I'm never gonna give away Wikipedia. I look at your run sheet, but you know, I got distracted whenever I loaded up AdamandEve.com, and I've just been on my safari ever since. But damn, so that fight's gone. Well, I don't know. You think Mike Perry's gonna do something stupid?
Look, I think stylistically, I think there's a reason they put that fight as the opening fight on ABC.
Yeah. Well, we shall see. We shall monitor the social media feeds following this fight, because it feels like every time Mike Perry fights, within 2 weeks, he does something stupid.
I do feel that if he loses, I think it will be his final fight in the UFC.
Yeah, he's definitely already done things that are fireable offenses outside of the octagon. So I certainly think you are right. But yeah,
I think another fighter to pay attention to is Jack Shore on the prelims.
Yeah, that's a good one. Shore is a good fight for sure. I'll watch. You know, Jorgen De Castro, Jardis Donhill could be a fun fight if it ends in the first round, or it could go three rounds and be boring, as is the usual at heavyweight. But to me, there's a pretty big drop off on quality from main card to prelim. But again, this is just not a sexy ABC main card. But I mean, Kevin Holland will be entertaining. He's going to bring the entertainment.
Look, I'm all about some afternoon MMA, bro.
Yeah, that's true. That is certainly true. I 100% dig it and grateful. You know, we are going to get our MMA diet in ourselves early. We're going to get that Friday night Bellator afternoon MMA with the UFC. And I don't really, oh, I guess they're probably going head to head with the Masters if you're a big golf fan.
Yeah. By the time this show probably will just be released at this time, but here on Wednesday night, you got the ONE Championship event on TNT, headlined by DJ in the main event and Eddie Alvarez in the co-main event.
Yeah, maybe if enough interesting things happen, we can talk about it. I got to record that, actually.
It's airing live. It's airing live, too.
Yeah, I saw that on TNT. That's crazy. Not on TNT, right?
No, it's on TNT, yeah. Yeah, it's on TNT and the Bleacher Report app.
What time is it airing again?
10:30 Eastern Coast time.
Oh, okay.
You'll be sleeping.
My brain is misfiring because for some reason when I was reading about it earlier today, I thought it was 8 Eastern, and then my brain just completely...
No, I think the prelims start at 8 Eastern, but the main card is at 10.
My brain exploded because today I recorded AEW on TNT from 7 to 9. So now I got to go to my TV as soon as we're done recording and record the ONE FC. So, that's kind of cool to get that on TNT.
It'll be interesting to see with, you know, obviously we've seen the numbers that AEW brings in I wonder how many people who are watching AEW live will stick around and watch the MMA.
Yeah, well, it'll be interesting. I mean, I think the numbers for this AEW are going to be lower than usual because they are going head-to-head with NXT's version of WrestleMania. So it's WrestleMania weekend.
You don't got to tell me, bro. Yeah,
that's true. They're doing
it. You don't got to tell me. It is 20, 25 minutes away from my house.
Have you noticed WrestleMania stuff?
I've seen – Oh, well, I haven't driven up by the stadium, so I'm sure there's a ton of stuff in that direction. But I mean, look, you talk about news stories. Yeah, there's a ton of news stories about.
Are you going to go?
No one's asked me yet. If someone asks me, I will go.
Yeah.
But have I bought tickets? No.
Yeah, the card isn't. There's nothing that's very interesting. I think they're waiting until next year. Whenever, I feel like they didn't know if they were going to have fans in attendance or not before they booked the card. So
look, if any of my friends are listening or watching this, if you got a free ticket, I'll buy a couple rounds of beers.
Yeah, maybe you'll see Gronkowski there. Gronkowski might be there, man.
I would bet that I would imagine they have probably reached out to Buccaneer players, asked them to be there. I'm sure they have.
Absolutely. I think, I do wonder if they'll do a Tom Brady cameo. I doubt it. I feel like Tom is just a little too cool for pro wrestling. He's just a little too cool, but for sure.
I feel like that there would be a 7-figure check attached to that.
Yeah, but they're also, I think they're already paying for Logan Paul and for Bad Bunny to do a match. And Bad Bunny's kind of more my neck of the woods, more like the Latino pop thing. But yeah,
Okay, I saw that. So like, is he like a rapper?
I guess.
Or is he a legit wrestler?
No, he's a rapper. He's like he's really popular.
Okay.
For like people who are like going to clubs like in their
20s. So basically you're saying I'm too old. Is that what you're saying? You're a little too
old. But it's not like I listen to Bad Bunny either. He's I'm almost too old for Bad Bunny. Like I'm 25, I'm probably too old. But he's popular. Like he's real popular, but he loves pro wrestling, and so apparently he spent like a lot of time training in the performance center. And he's looking to have a halfway decent match at WrestleMania. We shall see.
All right. So I just pulled up on my Apple Music. Interesting. Maybe I'll have to take a listen.
Yeah. Well, I just can't imagine you listening to Bad Bunny. I feel like half his songs are in Spanish, I think.
Okay.
I would love to see you jamming out to Bad Bunny working out at the gym. But even I don't listen to Bad Bunny, Jason.
Yeah.
I listen to Blink 182.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, the one guy I would go to see at WrestleMania would be Bray Wyatt. Just because when Bray was coming up, he'd always come into the radio station. When he was working his way up, yeah. Back when no one knew who he was. When he was just, God. I know his real last name.
Rotunda.
Yeah.
So he was wrestling for the local developmental, and he would do
he interviews. He was at FCW. So literally where FCW was back in the day was literally a 2-minute ride from our radio station. And so, all the wrestlers lived in the area. They would come in to the radio station all the time. You'd see him at the gym all the time. Yeah. There was one, the gym I used to be at back in the day, a lot of them would train there. And I just remember, I won't say the guy's name, but every time I went in there, all I ever see him do was bench press. Never saw him do anything else. Wow. Literally sat at the bench press for 2 hours.
Just nonstop pumping iron?
Yeah.
That's crazy. I can't imagine being at the bench press for more than like 30 minutes. But for that to be your entire, which to be fair, I love the bench too. Like, I don't know why. I think I love it because, well, one, I hate squatting. But, I hate squatting. But bench is easy, kind of. But for that to be the only thing you do is kind of insane. But also, I feel like I feel the most gains in my chest than anything else. So I kind of like it too.
Man, look, I'm just waiting for when's the next time Daniel the cameraman is going to step into the ring? That's all I'm waiting for.
Yeah, who knows, man? Who knows? Every time I get in the ring, I get my ass kicked. So I don't know how good of a strategy it may be, but we shall see. We shall see, buddy.
I always get a kick out when I see that on your Instagram stories and your Facebook stories.
Yeah, man. Yeah, we got a show coming up towards the end. It's usually towards the end of every month is usually when we have our big show. So usually they're nice enough to give me a little spot where I get my ass kicked. You never see someone that happy get their butt wet, but I enjoy it.
Of course, be sure to subscribe to the MMA Report on your favorite podcasting platform. If you happen to be watching clips on YouTube, be sure to subscribe to the channel, like the video, hit that notification bell so you know when a new show is live on the channel. Of course, on Sunday will be the next edition of the podcast. I do know Andrew Whitney, who's going to be fighting at CES 62 at the end of the month. He will be on the show and working on some other interviews as well. So that is going to do it for this edition of the MMA Report podcast. Be sure to check out our advertiser, Adam and Eve. Visit Adam and Eve and select almost any one item for 50% off. And then Adam and Eve loads on the free stuff. Just enter our code MMA at checkout, and they will also give you 10 tantalizing free gifts, a sexy item for him, a special gift for her, and a third item you will both enjoy. Plus, they'll give you 6 free spicy movies. Just make sure to enter code MMA at checkout at adamandeve.com. So that's going to do it for this edition of the MMA Report podcast, which comes out 2 times a week on Wednesday and on Sundays on your favorite podcasting platform and radioinfluence.com.
I'm Jerry Pitot, CEO of Radio Influence. There are a lot of people behind the scenes here at Radio Influence that work hard to keep you entertained day in and day out. If you'd like to get involved and advertise on any of our programming, or if you have some show ideas you'd like to see us add to the Radio Influence family, please email us at contact@radioinfluence.com. We all have crazy schedules, so the fact that you take time out of your busy day to let us entertain you for a while means more than you could ever know. Without you, the listener, we wouldn't exist, so thank you again for downloading and subscribing to all of our programming. You can find all of Radio Influence's programming on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and of course, radioinfluence.com.